All right, Alexander, we finally have the final results with all the elections throughout Super Thursday in the United Kingdom, and we also have the results from Scotland. And there were a lot of big elections that took place. London, the mayor of London, there was Wales. But I think one of the most interesting ones was, of course, Scotland, because we have the question of Scottish independence and perhaps a second referendum. What is going on here?
Right. Now, the thing to say is that, you know, this has been very carefully watched. In my opinion, if Boris Johnson's government in London is going to face a crisis on any big topic soon, that will probably come from Scotland, because what is the outcome of the election in Scotland is that the Scottish Nationalist Party did not win an outright majority. It is now in a position to push for a second referendum, because the Scottish Nationalist Party, led by Nicola Sturgeon, in alliance with the Green Party, which supports Scottish independence, has a majority of 14 in the Scottish Assembly, the Scottish Parliament. So Nicola Sturgeon is talking about her desire to hold a second referendum. Boris Johnson, who under British law has to agree to one, is refusing to do so. She says that if he persists in that, he is taking on the people of Scotland. There is pressure on her from within her party and from forces outside it to call a referendum, regardless of what Boris Johnson does or says. If she does do so in defiance of the government in London, then we have a constitutional crisis, the like of which we haven't seen in Britain since, well, I can't even think back for how long, I suppose, since the first moves towards Ireland gaining independence back in the first years of the 20th century. So we will have a major crisis on our hands. I think that this is going to be a huge challenge for Johnson and for his political skills. If he handles this badly, not only might Scotland break away, but it could even break away in a manner that would make it adversarial to England and to whatever is left of the United Kingdom after it goes. My own view is that if he's able to hold the line and keep things together with Scotland and England for the next few years, then you will start to see a pendulum shift back towards pro-unionist sentiment in Scotland. I've discussed this in previous programmes. You began to see the first hints and signs of this in the Scottish Assembly elections. There seems to be a consolidation of unionist votes, and unionist parties, or rather unionist voters, seem to be engaging in what is called tactical voting. That's to say, they will support each other in individual constituencies to keep the nationalists down. But that is still at its very early stage. So Johnson, if he wants to preserve the United Kingdom, needs to play for time, but he needs to do it in such a way that he doesn't create a crisis for himself between England and Scotland.
Okay. I'm going to ask you a question, and then I'm going to read you a quote from an op-ed from George Galloway. And the question is the SNP, did they have a victory, or was it something else? Was it a wash? Was it the fact that they didn't have sufficient competition? Anyway, just hold that thought. But my question is kind of like, is the SNP the real deal? Is it the real deal? And here's the quote from an op-ed from George Galloway. In fact, Scotland now has a government more than two-thirds of us didn't vote for. Only 31% of Scots voted for the SNP last Thursday. More voters backed the unionist parties than backed the separatist ones. But for the bovine dogmatic insistence of the pro-union parties in fielding no hope, third and fourth place candidates, and splitting the union vote, the SNP would have been put to the sword. In contest after contest, SNP candidates survived and were elected only, and he has that in caps, only because of split unionist voting. What do you make of that excerpt from George Galloway? And my initial question about the real, does the SNP really wield that much power?
George Galloway is absolutely right. And this is what I meant when I said that there is now a consolidation of the unionist vote. Up to this election, the SNP looked like an unstoppable force in Scotland. It had grown steadily in strength. And I would add that, and this is an important caveat to make to George Galloway's comments, it did increase its vote in this election. But by nowhere near the amount that it had expected to a few months ago. So it is looking as if it is starting to run out of steam, out of momentum. And given that there is a lot of criticism in Scotland about the way that the SNP has been governing Scotland, that's why I said if Boris Johnson finds a means to play for time, is able to avoid an outright bust-up with Scotland, then it seems to me the timing is in his favour. Because what we were starting to see, and George Galloway is absolutely right to call it out, by saying that he didn't go far enough, what we are starting to see is a situation where in individual constituencies, this range of unionist parties, Labour, Conservative, Liberal Democrat and all the rest, their voters, even though they insist on fielding candidates, each one of them in each constituency, their voters are starting to look at who is the unionist candidate and the leading unionist candidate in any particular constituency, and uniting behind that person. It's only just starting, but it is beginning to make itself manifest. And given that the SNP does seem to be running out of momentum at the moment, if Johnson is able to string this along in some way, then it is quite likely that we will start to see this SNP, this nationalist tide, start to recede. Galloway is absolutely right. It accounts for just over 30% of the vote in Scotland. A sentiment in favour of independence appears to have been declining over the last few weeks. If the SNP can't get it done soon, there's a good chance it will never happen at all. So it really comes back to Johnson's political skills, and Galloway is absolutely right. The SNP looks like a stronger force than it really is. If you actually go there and do the analysis on the ground, it does look as if sentiment in Scotland is shifting.
Does the SNP really want to pull the trigger on a second referendum? I say that because they're also probably looking at Europe and they're saying, okay, the logic is this. I imagine the logic is this. Scotland leaves the UK, joins the EU right away. That's a fantasy logic. I don't think it's going to be that simple a path, because there's a lot of reasons why the EU may not admit them in. You know, you can look at Spain and other countries which may say this is problematic to take Scotland in. Anyway, the logic may be, look, we're going to leave the UK, we're going to leave one union, and go to another union, and that union is the better union. That may be the feeling. It's the EU, it's the better union. But everyone who knows something looks at the EU right now and says, my God, this place is in shambles, it's falling apart. And if we know that, and our viewers know that, I'm sure the SNP also knows that, at least the higher ups are also saying, you know what, do we really want to pull the trigger on this? I know we talk about it, but Europe doesn't look too good right now. And why would we want to enter a union which looks like it's going to break apart in a few years anyway? So what do you make of that question?
Well, the short answer is that I'm not convinced that Nicola Sturgeon does actually want independence for Scotland, and I'm not convinced that the SNP leadership deep down wants independence for Scotland either. Look at it from their point of view. They've been the government of Scotland for a very long time now. They have very extensive powers to run Scotland, and they have run Scotland. Many people criticise the way they've done it. There's a widespread feeling on the part of many people that many things have gone wrong in Scotland under their watch. Their administration hasn't been particularly good. There's been problems with education provision, problems with health provision, all kinds of criticisms of the SNP. I don't live in Scotland. I can't say how valid those are, but those criticisms are made. But they are in charge in Scotland. They are getting very large funding from London. Every year, the British government subsidises the Scottish government to a very great extent. This is a really rather comfortable setup from their point of view. They get the ministerial salaries, they get the cars, they get the patronage that goes with being in power. I don't get the impression that these people are too keen on independence, because that will simply create problems for them which at the moment don't exist. And you're absolutely perfectly right, they look across the sea to the European Union, they see a total shambles there. They probably ask themselves whether they would really have more freedom in a within the European Union than they would have as part of the United Kingdom, where Scotland is, remember, it's a major political force within the United Kingdom. In the European Union, it would just be another very small country which Brussels would be able to walk over whenever it wanted to. So there are all these factors. Now, I'm not convinced the SNP leadership are actually that keen on pushing for independence. They had a good opportunity to do it after the Brexit referendum happened, and then again after Brexit actually happened. They'd opposed Brexit. They could have said, well, you know, England is going one way, we're going another, we want to be part of the EU. This is the time to call for a referendum. And they didn't do it. So I'm not convinced that they do want a referendum. But at the same time, they have to bear in mind that there are enthusiastic nationalists amongst many of their grassroots and their voters. And they will say, well, if you do not really aim and push for referendum, what is the point of you? Ultimately, we are supporting you, not so that you can be in power in Edinburgh with, you know, your ministerial salaries, your cars, your offices and your patronage networks and all that. We are voting for you because we expect you to lead Scotland to independence. So they have to go through the motions of saying that they want independence. They have to talk about wanting an independence referendum, because otherwise they will go completely contrary to their own grassroots. But at the same time, maybe they are not as enthusiastic about that idea and as enthusiastic about the idea of embracing Europe as they pretend. That's why I say Johnson, if he is astute and clever, and by the way, he is both those things. I mean, Johnson has many faults. I've discussed them many times in our programmes. He's a poor manager, a bad administrator, but he is a skillful diplomat in his own kind of way. He knows how to, you know, blag things along and, you know, string people along and cut deals and do things. If he's able to use all those skills he has and use them effectively, then he has an opening, because he has an SNP leadership which says it wants independence, but perhaps ultimately, deep down, in the core of their being, they don't really believe in it. If you want to see what a real independence supporter feels about the SNP, go to Craig Murray, check out his blog. You will see that he is constantly saying that he doesn't believe that Nicola Sturgeon is really serious about independence for Scotland.
Okay, so can you make the argument that Scotland say Scotland does have a referendum and say they do go their own way and they vote for sovereignty, is it a viable argument to say that Scotland can stand on its own? In other words, out of the UK, but not into the EU? That's number one. And is that, could the SNP make an argument that that would be beneficial for the future of Scotland? Political, financial, economic, everything. Could you make the argument that Scotland doesn't need to join any union? It can just stand on its own, negotiate its own trade agreements, and be, its own sovereign country outside of any unions. Because, and you may want to get into it a little bit, there's no doubt England, the UK needs Scotland. At least that's how I see it. And there's no doubt Scotland needs the UK. I mean, there are ties there. I know there's social, financial, economic. There's also national interest, defense, and resources and stuff like that. Very critical things are actually binding the two regions together. National defense interests are binding the two regions together. So, can you get into that a little bit?
Yeah, I think Scotland could, in theory, go on its own. I mean, it's got a large territory. It's got an educated population. It's got natural resources. It's still got oil. That's a diminishing asset, but it could, in theory, go on its own. But I think it will be very difficult, and perhaps more difficult than the nationalist politicians in Scotland are admitting to themselves and to their people, given that Scotland it has arguably, in my opinion, well, unquestionably benefited economically very considerably from being part of the United Kingdom, and has now anyway a devolved government which is able to use funding from London to benefit Scotland. I'm far from convinced that it would work well. And you're quite right. If England loses Scotland, then the United Kingdom loses Scotland, then the rump England that's left will be a diminished power on the world stage. Its prestige will have been weakened. Its security will have been weakened. Its economic position will have been weakened. And it won't be taken so seriously anymore. But a little Scotland by itself, because it would be a small country with a population of 5 million or so, it would struggle, I think, to get itself noticed. And it perhaps needs to consider the great difficulties Ireland had after it achieved independence from Britain in the 1920s. Eventually, after about 50 years, Ireland began to sort of boom. But before then, the Irish economy, which had been growing strongly up to Irish independence, basically stagnated, and Ireland became very poor. Now, the Irish will tell you, and it's absolutely their right to say it, that it was a price that they consider fully worth paying for Irish independence. There was a strong feeling in Ireland that Ireland was being heavily repressed by Britain. There were sectarian differences, there was Protestant Catholic differences, there's all sorts of things, and independence was their right. And that it is gaining that freedom was important to them. But I don't see that there is the same pattern of repression in Scotland anymore. Sectarian differences are irrelevant there. Scottish political leaders have been very active in British politics. Gordon Brown, who was Prime Minister only, relatively short time ago, up to 2010, was Scottish. There have been many Scottish politicians that who have been important figures in Britain, many Scottish business people, many Scottish scientists, engineers, Scottish generals, military officers. So I don't really see that Scotland objectively and materially gains anything by independence. And as a little country all by itself, it probably loses a great deal. Perhaps the other thing to bear in mind is that a Scotland outside the European Union, but independent, would in effect and in reality become dependent economically again on the much richer and far bigger economy to the south of it, which is England. So we would have that pattern of dependence resume. but with the important difference that up to now, as part of the United Kingdom, Scotland has a voice in London. It elects MPs to the British Parliament. It can have a Scotsman become British Prime Minister. But an independent Scotland would not have any of those things. So in some ways, it could end up more dependent and weaker in relation to London than it is now. Now, I think all of this needs to be explained and thought through in Scotland. I think the Scottish people are extremely acutely, open to this kind, to these points. And I think if people think about those long and hard, then it might be that we will start to see, as I said, this independence tide, which start to recede. In my opinion, it is already doing so. And perhaps I would add one further quick point, which is not perhaps a major topic for discussion on this video. But in my opinion, the reason, one of the reasons why we see this huge surge of support for the Scottish Nationalists in Scotland over the last 20 years is less because of any strong attraction to independence per se, but because of enormous collapse of support in Scotland for the Labour Party in Scotland, which was used to be the dominant party in Scotland. And all those voters, left-wing voters, who feel betrayed and alienated from the Labour Party, have looked for somewhere to go. And they ended up backing the Social Democratic left-wing, as they see it, SNP. So it's partly a reaction to the failure of Labour that the SNP has become as strong as it has. And if that starts to right itself, which is debatable, then again, some of the reasons for the rise of nationalist sentiment in Scotland might start to recede.
All right, very quickly, Alexander, to wrap up the video, one more question. Can you name some other countries that would be against Scotland entering the EU as an independent nation? Say once again, the hypothetical that Scotland does vote to leave the UK. I mentioned Spain, maybe Italy, maybe one. What other countries come to mind that may we're not going to touch an independent Scotland coming into the EU because it'll create tremendous difficulties for us? What countries come to mind?
Another one, obviously, is Belgium, which is split down the middle between its French-speaking and its Dutch-speaking populations. So, I mean, there are those. Belgium is certainly one possibility. I'm going to say something. I mean, I think even Germany would have concerns. I mean, we tend to think of Germany as a very solid place, and in some ways it is. But bear in mind, there has always been a history of particularist and independent sentiment in places like Bavaria. And if you look at places like the Rhineland and you go back in time to the history of Germany, well, the first post-war German chancellor, Konrad Adenauer, who was a Catholic from the city of Cologne in Western Germany, he had actually dabbled before the war with the idea of creating a Catholic Rhenish German state separated from what he saw Prussia in the east. So, I mean, there are these stresses even within Germany. So I'm far from convinced that most countries in Europe would be at all keen to welcome an independent Scotland. I mean, the EU doesn't like secessionist movements. It doesn't like strong governments. It doesn't like secessionist movements either. What it wants is to concentrate everything in Brussels, not particularly want to embrace government independent countries like Scotland that emerge through secessionist movements at all. And by the way, France, which at the moment under Macron probably would support a Scottish bid to join the EU, has secessionist issues of its own in Corsica, potentially in the Basque territories, and elsewhere. So they might not be conceivably even in Brittany. So it might not be too keen either. So one can see why a lot of European countries might not be entirely sympathetic with this proposal if it was ever to be made to them.
All right, we'll leave it there. We'll continue to follow this story, guys. I will put a 10% discount code. Use Real News at the Durant Shop. All the merchandise, 10% off. You'll find that link down below. Super U, Locals Odyssey. That is where you will find exclusive videos and exclusive content. Super U, free speech platform. Locals is the Durant community. And Odyssey is the blockchain video platform. Take care.